This is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. For decades, we've been told that the best diet includes cutting back on fat, especially saturated fat. But what if the low-fat diet is itself the problem? What if those exact foods we've been denying ourselves, the creamy cheeses, the sizzling steaks, are themselves the key to reversing the epidemics of obesity, diabetes, and heart disease? Nina Teicholz, author of Big Fat Surprise, joins us to discuss these topics and more, and it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Could everything we've been told about dietary fat be wrong? Our next guest says more, not less fat is needed for better health and weight loss. Joining us is award-winning investigative journalist and New York Times best-selling author of The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet, Nina Teicholz. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you today. You know, there seems to be this ongoing disagreement between plant-based diet advocates that say animal fat and protein is the root of all disease and those that say eating animals is vital if we want to live long and healthier lives. Share with us, why is there such a disconnect and why you advocate butter, meat, and cheese for the diet?
Well, you really just get right at the heart of the diet wars today. It's complicated, but basically, the plant-based diet comes out of the low-fat movement. That, you know, there was a move towards low-fat really starting in the 1950s and 60s, which started to, that was when the idea was first proposed that the saturated fats found largely in animal foods and cholesterol cause heart disease. So that goes back to a hypothesis by Ancel Keys in the 1950s. And from that, there was a shift towards more plant-based foods, more grains, more fruits and vegetables, and Americans have increased all of those foods in the last, since 1970, grains are up by 41%, vegetables are up by 23%, fruit is up by, I think, 13%. I might have those numbers flipped. But anyway, we have increased all our consumption of all those foods, and we've decreased fat. And so the people who are behind the plant-based diet, they believe that we should go even further in that direction. You know, somebody like Dean Ornish believes that we should eat a really low-fat diet and have almost, you know, really verging on a vegan diet. So my response to that is that might be a healthy diet, but there are precisely zero clinical trials to show that that diet can be healthy. And even people who are vegans themselves will acknowledge that there's a lack of nutritional sufficiency in that diet because certain, especially B vitamins, you just cannot get from plant foods. And they're essential for human development, especially for children. Iron, folate, only those bioavailable forms of those come from mostly, you know, from meat. So the arguments in my book are that, one, the randomized, controlled, rigorous clinical trial research shows that reducing fat does not help you fight any kind of disease, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, or cancer. That's a huge clinical, rigorous clinical trial literature. And there's also another body of clinical trials, again, the most rigorous kind of research that you can do on thousands of people, more than 70 clinical trials showing that cutting back on carbohydrates, even a little or a lot, is effective for fighting those diseases. So one has to conclude that a higher fat diet, even just going back to what we used to eat in 1965 before we embarked on the low fat diet, even just going back to that, is healthier. Where is fat found? How do you ramp up your fat? So where is fat found naturally is in animal foods, right? Otherwise, you can drink a bowl full of vegetable oil or you know, but fat is naturally found in animal foods. So that's kind of the first line of argument on that. And the second line is that those are also the foods that will make up a nutritionally sufficient diet. That's where the nutrients are. That's where they are in their most bioavailable form. So that's, you know, a second argument. I mean, I could give you arguments three, four, and five, but, you know, basically that's what the rigorous clinical trial literature supports. The plant-based diet advocates rely exclusively on a weak kind of evidence that shows an association but not causation. It's called epidemiological evidence. It's usually more wrong than right, and it's just a weaker kind of evidence. So they don't have rigorous evidence to support their views.
So let me ask you, if someone is consuming buttermilk, adding cream to their coffee this morning, and eating beef, do you feel this diet in no way is to blame for their excessive weight, high cholesterol, blood sugar issues?
It's not what I believe. It's what the research literature shows. It shows that higher fat diets, diets that are higher in fat, you also have to restrict carbohydrates, right? It's a sort of a two-pronged approach. There's only three macronutrients, fat, protein, and carbohydrates. All right. Foods are made up of those. So if you increase fat, you must reduce carbohydrates. Protein stays constant. And in those diets, the rigorous clinical trial research shows that a higher fat diet, lower in carbohydrates, is highly effective for combating, actually reversing out of those chronic diseases, heart disease, obesity, diabetes. And there's a lot of literature to show that reducing fat has no positive effect on those diseases. So, you know, this is what the clinical trial research shows. It's just that our dietary guidelines, everything that we've been told, have not really responded to that literature yet.
Right. So is there any type of animal fats that we should avoid, or is everything fair game?
Everything is fair game. You know, almost all foods are a mixture of saturated fats, right? There's not one kind. Most foods are a mixture. Like half of a porterhouse steak is the same kind. Half of the fat in a porterhouse steak is the same kind of fat you find in olive oil.
Right.
Bacon. The fat in bacon is more of it is the same kind of olive oil fatty acid than it is saturated fat. So all foods are a combination of different fats, and none of those have been shown. They've been tested in large clinical trials, and none of those saturated fats are shown to have any effect on cardiovascular mortality.
So do you draw the
line? Or any association with saturated fats.
Do you basically advocate then organic, no antibiotics? Is there a rule there that yes, animal fat's good as long as you find certain sources?
You know, like all foods, I think all foods, if you can afford it, to buy the highest quality food that you can is crucial. If you can buy, you know, your fruits and vegetables without pesticides, that's better. If you can buy, you know, grass-fed beef, that's probably, you know, better for you. But the main thing you should be doing is just buying, you know, the right foods, you know, certainly not sugar and refined carbohydrates, right. And you know, certainly to like to shop, you know, to get a major proportion of your foods from meat, fish, vegetables, and then you know a minor proportion from grains and even for fruit, you know, can be high in sugar. So for people who are obese or diabetic, you know, fruit is not their friend.
Right. What would you say to people who have high cholesterol? Doesn't saturated fat raise people's cholesterol levels and contribute to heart disease? I think that's been debunked.
Well, it turns out that, you know, the original hypothesis in the 1950s was saturated fat raised your total cholesterol, and your total cholesterol is what would indicate, you know, your risk of heart attack. That just total cholesterol turns out to be a very poor predictor of heart attack risk. There are other markers that predict heart attack risk much better. So that is like your triglycerides, your HDL. There's something called small dense LDL that is, you know, or your LDL particle number. Anyway, these much more, you know, we've had 50 years of testing this hypothesis now and looking at populations and seeing what best predict heart disease. By these more up-to-date biomarkers, saturated fats look just fine. They either beneficially impact those markers, or they have no negative effect on them. But again, it's increase saturated fat and reduce carbohydrates. I mean, here's just a little known fact about saturated fat that nobody knows. But there is only one food that you can eat to raise your HDL. That's your good cholesterol. If you go to your doctor, you say my HDL is a little low. What can I do? And they'll say, oh, you can try exercising or drinking more red wine. But the most effective way to raise your good cholesterol is to eat more saturated fat. It consistently raises HDL.
Interesting. Yeah, quite opposite of what we've been told. I know your book's been honored as number one book of the year, and I believe the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition said it should be read by every nutritional science professional. That's a big statement, Nina. What do you feel sets your book apart from so many other diet nutrition books on the market?
Well, first of all, my book is not a diet book. There's no, unfortunately, there are no recipes in it. So it's not, you know, it's a serious book. The Economist, which said it was the number one science book of 2014, they called it a nutrition thriller. Other people have said it's like a crime story. But it's, you know, it's the politics and personalities and science, the whole story of how we went down this kind of rabbit hole of having this low-fat advice that we've been living for 50 years. So I think, but my book was, so it really tells the story. It's like a novel, but it has a tremendous amount of research behind it. That's one thing. I mean, I read, it took me almost a decade to write. I have thousands of studies that are covered in it. So it's extremely rigorously researched. I talked to hundreds of scientists all over the world. It's also the first real, you know, publication anywhere to really take on all the arguments about saturated fat. Its real main focus is that saturated fat was unfairly demonized and should not have ever been labeled a dietary boogeyman. And it explains all the very different strands of arguments and talks about the vegetable oil companies and their role in trying to replace their products when we were getting rid of saturated fats. So, and it also really names names. You know, it talks about the scientists who brought about this bad advice, many of whose names are still all over, you know, newspaper and magazine articles today. And so it's a little scandalous. For better or for worse.
Speaking of scandalous, I believe you published an article in the British Medical Journal last year, I think it was, critiquing the science behind the dietary guidelines, and that caused some ruffled feathers, to put it mildly. Tell us more about the recent outcome and your perseverance.
Well, that was an article. So I did this major critique of the expert report used to create our dietary guidelines. You know, our dietary guidelines, which are probably the single most influential lever on American eating habits. They inform everything that, you know, every doctor, dietitian, nutritionist, school educator, all those people key back to the dietary guidelines for their advice. So that's this incredibly important document. And if you follow nutrition science, you're like, okay, you know, 2015 rule, the newest iteration of the guideline rolls around, and, you know, I'm reading the extra report, and I'm realizing, like, where's the science from the last 5 years? It just hasn't covered it. It hasn't covered any of the science in the low-carb diet. It hasn't updated the science on saturated fat. So I did this very rigorous critique of sort of what happened. Why did they not cover the science? And that was published by the British Medical Journal last fall. And then that was so... I mean, nobody really had ever done this before, right? Peer-reviewed article with a major critique of the science behind the guidelines. And so 180 scientists, including all the members of the 2015 Dietary Guideline Committee, signed a letter asking the BMJ to retract my article based on 11 alleged errors. Well, that was a terrifying thing to go through, but as of about 10 days ago, the BMJ ruled that they were not retracting, and not only that, they stood up very strongly for the article. They said, you know, the editor-in-chief herself said, you know, we stand by the article, we echo its conclusions, we believe nutrition science is, you know, needs reform. I mean, it was a very strong endorsement of the That's article, great. But I really didn't know up to the very end what they would do, And so it was, you know, it was like having a scimitar hanging over my head for a year.
Yeah.
Let me ask, was
there some bias vested interest at play here, or what I like to refer to as manipulation? What were they afraid of?
Well, it's a complex topic, but, you know, in short, yes, there are huge monetary vested interests behind the guidelines, including, you know, a lot of money for various food industries, including all grain, soybean, vegetable oil companies, like, you know, enormous companies, ADM, Monsanto, Cargill, Unilever. There's the whole pharmaceutical industries that support all the medical societies and make a huge amount of money from keeping people sick. There's the vested interest of institutions in not being wrong, not getting it, you know, not being terribly wrong. So that's the entire federal government, the American Heart Association, and there's all the university professors who have published for 50 years to studies to support this advice, which now it seems we're trying to reverse out of because it's clearly hasn't been based on good science. So everybody's reputations and scholarly work is on the line. Some of the interest.
Yeah, well, you know, it was really great to see that you went to bat and you stood strong with your stance and the research that backs it up. A lot of people would have said, oh, I can't fight this and turn the other way, but you stood strong, so congrats on that.
Thank you. That's a big thumbs up. Don't really have a choice. At some point, you know, when you see what the scientific literature shows and you feel like this is, I mean, on one level, it's about truth in science, right? But it really is also about the health of the nation. I mean, there's so much chronic disease, right? Over half of Americans are pre-diabetic or diabetic. 2/3 of Americans are overweight or obese. These people are suffering grievously, and they're being given the wrong dietary advice for how to cure themselves. In fact, the dietary advice they're given, a high-grain diet, low in fat, is probably making them worse. So that seems to be, you know, terrible, criminal. I mean, that's really just wrong. That cannot be allowed to stand. That has to change so that there's not so much suffering in America, or, you know, not to mention the cost of treating all those people, and they're all getting surgery. And, you know, none of that is necessary. The drugs, the surgery, all of that. You can reverse yourself out of chronic diseases by just simply eating a healthier diet, you know, higher in fat, lower in carbs. There is quite a lot of evidence to show that for people with those metabolic conditions, that diet will help them reverse out of those conditions.
So the husbands listening right now are like shaking their head, looking at the wife saying, all right, honey, so tonight I want a T-bone steak, baked potato, butter and sour cream. That's okay.
Yeah, maybe half a baked potato and some green vegetables. And cream sauce if you want it. And then you just eat, once you shift over, literally your fuel source for your body changes from carbs to fat. So you become, like, it actually changes your metabolism. Once you shift over, and there is a transition period, so it doesn't feel good for some people for a couple of weeks.
Right.
And that's when a lot of people give up and they say, oh, this is not good for me. But there's a transition period where you're literally changing your metabolic pathways and your fuel source is changing. But once you switch over, people just find they have more energy, and it, you know, it really just becomes a different way of life. And people, there's all kinds of resources that people you can find. Well, there's something called the ketogenic diet you can look up. There's low carb, high fat is sort of the key word for it.
Right. What about people
that do not cause heart disease? They're not bad for you.
What if somebody who just doesn't like to eat cows and they're more into fish or maybe chicken? Can they live the 100% healthy life, or do they really have to go out and force themselves to have a steak or a hamburger?
No, I mean, I think that it's possible to get all the nutrients you need from they just have, you know, some animal foods, whatever they are. I don't think you necessarily have to eat beef. You know, one thing you can do, you know, the most nutrient-dense food on the planet is liver. So it could come from any animal, but you know, that's where there's a reason that our grandparents were telling us to drink cod liver oil to protect us against getting sick. I mean, that's where a tremendous amount of vitamins come. But no, I mean, there are people who stayed, you know, healthy on dairy products alone. Dairy products, eggs. I mean, you really don't have to eat meat, and there are many people who don't feel comfortable eating meat for all sorts of very good reasons. I myself was a vegetarian for nearly 20 years. You can find all kinds of non-animal sources of good fats.
That's interesting that you mentioned, so you're a vegetarian, so you've seen from both sides, so you've kind of, and you feel better now that you've kind of put a more of a mixture in your diet. You've seen some positive things.
You know, one of the
things
that happens with vegetarians, and this happened to me, was that, you know, you tend to rely heavily on grains to make up your meal. And, you know, I was fat, not fat, but, you know, I'm 30, right. I was 30 pounds heavier than I am today. And all my heart disease risk factors looked far worse. And I was a young woman. Now I've just, I mean, over the course of doing my research, I gradually changed because I saw that there really wasn't science to support my choices. Now I'm much healthier. I'm thinner. I don't have to exercise as much to stay thin. I used to run 6 miles a day when I was a vegetarian. I mean, that was, you know, now I feel better. I have more energy. I don't get tired in the afternoon. I no longer get sinus infections for some mysterious reason, which I used to constantly have. I mean, it's bizarre how well this works for me. There are other people who can be on a plant-based diet, and you know, for them, it works for their metabolism. And then the question is you just have to make sure it's nutritionally sufficient.
Great. Interesting perspective on a side of somebody who's seen both worlds, and you can kind of relate back. In the minute we have left, any final thoughts you'd like to share? Why should listeners read this book?
Oh, well, I think that people have said it is kind of the brick of research that is needed to make you feel secure in believing something. You know, there's so much back and forth that goes on in the nutrition world. And I have had many people tell me that it wasn't until they read my book that they really felt secure in understanding that that they were changing their diet in a way that was scientifically supported and would help their health. So it might just be the brick that you and your doctor need to read.
Great. Well, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Nina.
Thank you for having me.
You've been an eye-opener. To learn more and to get your copy of this best-selling book, go to thebigfatsurprise.com. You can follow Nina on Twitter at BigFatSurprise. For our daily health tweets, follow me at Dr. David Friedman. Stay up to date with all of our latest health and wellness segments at toyourgoodhealthradio.com, iHeartRadio, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.